Blog Talk Radio. Hi, this is Marnie Svedberg, and I welcome you to Marnie and Friends, a place where leaders share practical, helpful, and encouraging ways to get anything important done faster, better, and smarter. Right now, I encourage you to sit back, buckle up, and join us for fun, laughter, practical help, and clear thinking, the kind of discussion that focuses our attention off of the fluff and onto the most important stuff in life. Again, welcome to Marnie's Friends. Let's get going. Hi, everybody. This is Marnie, and welcome back to another edition of Marnie's Friends. We're going to be talking today about how to make a good pitch, and we're not talking about baseball. We're talking about the kind of pitch that can win friends and influence people, that can put you kind of in the right position to be remembered at a time when you want to be remembered. And we have a wonderful guest with us today, Lisa B. Marshall. She's a communication strategist, author, and professional speaker who helps organizations improve productivity through improved communication. She has a forthcoming book coming out. In fact, you can get the pre-edition right now, Smart Talk. It's a handy, no-nonsense communication skill-building guide, a Swiss Army knife for business communication. And Lisa's joining us right now from her website, quickanddirtytips.com. Welcome, Lisa.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here, and I kind of found out about you because I was actually doing a little research on this topic myself, how to write a good pitch, and you had a great title for an article you wrote called How to Make a Good Pitch. How straightforward is that?
Yeah, the straightforward ones seem to work well.
You bet. It was actually exactly what I was searching for, and there you were. By the way, which is a great strategy, no matter what you're doing, is try to be where people are looking for you, using the terms that they would be looking for you using. And when we work with speakers over at womenspeakers.com, you know, when you're doing your bio, and everybody in Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, Pinterest, wherever you are, when you're doing your bio, use the kind of words that people will search for you. Maybe they don't even know you. Like Lisa, I didn't know you before, but I found you and I liked you and I liked your article. And so here we are. So very fun. We're going to talk today about how to make a good pitch, how to actually come up with the words that are going to make a difference when you only have 30 seconds to spend with somebody. And Lisa, maybe you can give us a little bit of a background. When was the first time, or maybe how did you come to realize that a pitch was an important thing to have?
Well, for me, I think it's first we need to talk about the difference between a pitch and an introduction.
Okay.
So just briefly, a pitch is when you're trying to talk about your business. And the introduction is when you're trying to introduce yourself, from my perspective. What you're doing in both cases is that you're trying to initiate some sort of connection. You're trying to build conversation so that you can build rapport with that person. And so when I first recognized the importance of introductions, which, again, in this case it was a business introduction, so I'll call it an introduction slash pitch, was way, way, way back early in my career. I was working at General Electric in a management training program, and we had these quarterly status meetings. And one time we were waiting and waiting and waiting for one of the speakers to come, one of the senior managers to arrive. And as my luck would have it, I needed to run to the restroom. And on my way back, I was trying to run into the conference room really quickly, and I bumped directly into somebody, and I looked up, and I realized immediately it was Jack Welch, who at the time was the CEO of the company. And that's, in fact, who we were waiting for. And I was so embarrassed, and I started apologizing, and, you know, I stuck up my hand, and I said, well, and he said to me, well, hello, I'm Jack Welch. And I started laughing, and I said, well, of course you are. I know who you are. And then he looked at me and very graciously said, well, and you are? And, of course, I fumbled it from there, and I went back to my seat. I was completely red and embarrassed, my heat in my face. Oh, my gosh, it was horrible. Mm-hmm. Something I still think about to this day, what a poor representation of myself. I had blown a huge opportunity, you know, to represent myself in a really, really professional way, and I blew it. And I realized right from then that this is something that's important because – you never know. You just never know when you're going to meet somebody who's going to be able to help you both professionally or even personally, and that you should have something prepared, something that not necessarily the exact words, but you should at least think about what it is that you'd like to present or how it is that you'd like to present yourself. And this is something, you know, that you need to revisit over time. You know, one time when you're early in your career, you may want to represent yourself one way, and, you know, as your career progresses and your life changes, you may want to represent yourself differently. So it's something you need to actually spend time doing, and I think very few people actually do.
Now, if you had, if you were to meet Jack again today, and he says, "Okay, and who are you?" What would you say today?
Today, as a professional, or are you saying back in the day? What I said to him in that moment.
Today, if you met him at a cocktail party.
Today, I'd say, "Well, hello, I'm Lisa. I'm Lisa B. Marshall, and I help people improve business and personal communication. And the reason that I do this is because of you, Jack." Because, because in your organization, I discovered that communication skills were things that were causing obstacles or causing GE to lose money. And so thanks to you, you sent me to get my master's degree in communication, and you helped me to learn how to talk about communication for businesses. Mm. And that's what I do today. I write books. I do deliver seminars. I have articles. I do a variety of things to help both organizations and individuals to be more productive with their communication skills.
That's great.
If you'd
like
to learn more, you can get my book. No, I wouldn't say that.
Actually, I have one right here if you want me to autograph it for you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But in general, it is good to have at least a call to action in the back of your mind in case it does make sense to do a call to action, which would be, you know, something that you'd like the person to do.
Yeah. Well, I love all the things that you demonstrated and modeled for us in that. You demonstrated the components of a good pitch. We're going to talk about that in just a few seconds. You also demonstrated personalizing it. You included Jack's name in it and how he had been beneficial to you. And there are actually many times in which that's the case, where the person you're talking to, actually you have some kind of a connection with that person somewhere along the way that you can incorporate into the pitch that you've drafted earlier and memorized, or that comes naturally. Most of us kind of have to memorize it. I find that even though mine comes naturally because I've written it so many times on web pages and on different, you know, bios and different things like that. But at the same time, you do kind of have to practice this a little bit. We're going to talk about that a little bit later too. What are some of the values? Well, I guess before I pass that back to you, Lisa, and ask you for the purposes of a good pitch, I found Michael Hyatt is one of my favorite bloggers. And if you guys don't know about him, he's just over at michaelhyatt.com, and he's the CEO of, I think it's Bethany House, Harvest House. I got myself in trouble there. I don't know. Anyway, one of the largest Christian book publishers in the country, and he's awesome, awesome blog. But he says that there are three reasons why he says we need to have a good pitch. Number one is it forces us to clarify what we're about. So it really forces us to think it through. And then number two is it helps us to understand how the other person will perceive us. And so that's the second thing. Third, it provides a tool for enrolling strategic partners, which is always helpful, even if you don't know if they're going to be a strategic partner. Maybe you don't, you know that this person has any ability to ever do anything good for you back. But even so, just letting them know what you do, it could be that the very next day they bump into somebody who needs what it is that you do. Lisa, what are some other thoughts that you have there about the purposes of a good pitch?
So I think that pretty much covered it. I think what we need to think about is how are we going to advance our conversation, if you want to summarize all the three things that he just said. So you may advance the conversation for something that you do directly with that person. You may advance the conversation where they connect you with someone else. But the idea is to give them enough information or to have enough of an interaction so that you can take a next step. And that's really all it's about. It's developing common ground so that you can take a next step.
Yeah. One of the reason that this came up for me was because I'm going to actually be speaking at a few social networking speed networking events in Minneapolis in September, and I wanted to just make sure that what I perceived as a good pitch was a good pitch. One of the questions that I had when I was working on my own was, it feels really self-centered. it just, like everything else, when you're putting yourself out there, you have to have a little bit of a courage level in order to actually say these things about yourself. And like, you found yourself a little flat-footed with Jack Welch when you met him in the hallway because you weren't prepared way back then. What brings you to the point now where you have the confidence to actually develop this pitch and actually give it when you have the chance?
I think that if you put it in the light of how are you serving other people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you think about what you're communicating is something that's an offer. You know, I'm able to help you do X. I'm able to help people do X. So that they know, well, if I need that, what they're offering, I can come to that person and get that. And so for me, saying this is what I offer is, yes, is it self-serving? Yes, but it's also serving them more. It's helping them and serving the people that they interact with. And so thinking of it as a service, you know, this is what I do, this is how I can help you. It's not about me, it's about them. And that's, in fact, one of the things that I think it's really important to think about, especially for people who have a broad background like you, Marnie. You do a wide variety of things. You're not just a podcast host. You're not just an author. You're not just a owner of a general store. You do a lot of different things. And depending on who you meet, you may want to share bits and pieces of your life. You may not want to share your entire life, your entire business life. You may only want to share the parts that are important to that particular person. And so it's important to think about, well, how can I serve people in all these different parts of my life? And when I introduce myself, I'm only thinking about the introduction that's helpful for them.
Yeah.
And then that makes it feel less self-serving, because I'm not saying, I'm not doing a show up and throw up, you know, dumping everything on you that I do.
Right.
I'm thinking about, well, what is it that you do, and how can I help you do that better? Here's what I do that might be able to help you.
Yeah, I love that. And that's really, it comes back to the confidence of, are we doing what we were created to do? You know, is what you're doing really of value to anybody? And if it is, you can have confidence to actually put it out there, because it's helpful. It's not just about collecting a fee or selling a book for the sake of money. Like when you wrote your book, and I know when I write mine, the point is, the whole purpose of the long labor of love that goes into that is to put it together in such a way that someone can actually get at the information they need in one place, so that they can do it quickly and save time and energy from searching all over and, you know, maybe never even finding it. Okay, well, let's go ahead.
Right, just so that they benefit, right? The whole goal is that for most authors, I think most authors truly want to help other people. And a book is the easiest and most inexpensive way to help a large number of people. I mean, inexpensive from the consumer of the information, of course, as you know, and I know this. It takes a lot of work on our part for very little.
Right. And the publisher, of course, is putting in anywhere from $5,000 to $25,000 just right up front to get it off the ground. So there's definitely investment on it. But as far as the consumer goes, very inexpensive way to get a lot of a person's really expertise all in one place at one time. Yeah,
exactly.
Great way to go about it. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and talk about the components of a good pitch. We'll be right back. The fastest and easiest way to find out which major women's events are coming to your area is to visit www.womensevents.info. That's womensevents.info. It's the only directory of its kind, and it features all of the major events like Women of Faith, Beth Moore, eConference Women, and so many others. It's free to search, and you can find it all at womensevents.info. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is Marnie, and I'm visiting today with Lisa B. Marshall. Her website is quickanddirtytips.com, and she's got all kinds of good stuff over there for you. Her upcoming book is Smart Talk, and that's already available right now in pre-release format at the subtitle is The Public Speaker's Guide to Success in Every Situation. So you want to pick that book up, check it out. We're going to move right along. We're talking today about how to make a good pitch, and we're going to move right along and talk about what are the components of a good pitch. And obviously, you have to start with your name, but after that, there's some things that you really need to have in your pitch if it's going to be successful. So Lisa, why don't you just go ahead and take us through that?
So I'm going to walk you through the pieces. However, I want to say up front that, in my opinion, we should think about pitches in soundbite form. And soundbite meaning you develop short messages that you're ready with. They're in your pocket and ready to go when you meet a stranger. And you're going to pick out of your pocket each of these soundbites that makes sense for that particular person. And so you're not going to go through a standard structure each and every time. It's going to be different each and every time, but there's going to be certain elements that you're going to pick based on the conversation. So it sounds kind of stilted if you just go through it from a structural standpoint. And what we need to think about is how do we include these elements in a more free-form kind of way. So with that in mind, let's think about what are the elements. And, of course, you said the name. And then from there, I think we need to think about the area of expertise, or in essence, how you help the person. And I think that that's important to put up pretty early in your conversation. What's the benefit that you bring? So if I'm talking to you, Marnie, I see that I look at one of the ones you sent me, and the benefit that you bring is that you save time, you help people increase productivity, and you help to maximize the enjoyment in life. That's the three things, the three main benefits that you bring to someone. And so that's something that you would want to make sure that you include in there. You may want to get more specific, but in general, those are the three benefits. And then you need to include what it is that you do exactly. And so some people don't understand, you know, what is it that you do. If you say you're an engineer, that's generally for some people good enough. But in this case, if you're talking about your work and you're trying to sell services, which is this professional pitch, then you need to explain specifically what it is that you do. So you may say, in my case, I say, you know, I deliver workshops, I deliver seminars, I write books and articles, and I host a podcast. That may be sufficient. I just pick my three main things that I do. Or they may actually look at me and I can see, well, what do you mean? What kind of books do you write? Or what kind of seminars do you deliver? Or what's the podcast about? And then I reach in my pocket and I pull out my details about each of those elements. So you may want to have, again, backup of what it is that you do. But you still need to have them at the higher level and then the deeper level. And then this is very important, the next one. Why it is that you're different, or why it is that you're the best at what you do. And I think a lot of times people skip that. And the problem is if you skip why it is you're different or why it is that you're the best, then you sound like 15 other people who do the same thing. So why should they choose Lisa Marshall, or why should they choose Marnie for the mentoring, right? What is it that Marnie does differently from other people? And that needs to be said concisely in part of your pitch, or at least, again, part of the sound bites that you've got ready. And then finally, I mentioned before, the call to action. What is it that you want them to do as a result of this conversation? Right? Do you want them to go to a website? Do you want them to send you an email? Do you want them to phone you? Whatever it is that you want them to do, you need to include that as part of your pitch, quote pitch. So those are the main elements.
Okay, so let's go back and dissect these a little bit for those who are listening in and they're trying, you know, you guys are sitting out there with your pens and papers or your laptops open and you're trying to actually do this. You're trying to make one up. So let's go ahead and start with the name and area of expertise. Let's just spend a little bit of time here. Okay. So Lisa, what's your name and area of expertise?
So I'm Lisa B. Marshall, and I just want to stop right there because I did two things that I think are important to think about. First of all, I introduced myself twice. I used said my first name twice because lots of times when people are doing introductions, they're having a hard time because they're thinking about, they're nervous about what it is that they're going to say. And so it's helpful to give them the name twice, certainly the first name twice, so that they have a chance at remembering whatever it is your first name is. Okay. And so I also did another thing. I slowed down. I didn't say, hi, I'm Lisa B. Marshall. I didn't slur it and push it out, which is what a lot of people do. They say their name so many times that they say it so quickly that you can't understand them. And so as part of saying your name, again, say it. Say your name, your first name twice, say your last name, and say it slowly enough that the person can understand what it is that you're saying. So now, the next piece, your area of expertise and how you can help. So this, you need to think about what is your area of expertise. Now, for me, I could say, well, my area of expertise is communication, right? That could be really broad. I could say my area of expertise is business and personal communication. I could bring it down even deeper. I could say my area of expertise is public speaking, networking, and interviewing. I could take it down even deeper. Let's say I'm at a networking event, right? I might say, you know, I'm really skilled at introductions and conversation making. So your area of expertise is whatever is that's going to, again, that's going to make sense for that person, and you need to define for yourself the different areas of expertise you have. Now, Marty, I noticed on your website you've got 12 life, I forgot, which is zones.
Zones, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what you call them, right? So you, for example, have 12 life zones. Certainly when you meet someone, you're not going to say all 12 of your life zones.
Right, exactly.
Right, you're gonna pick something, whatever makes sense for that particular context, for that particular conversation, and you're gonna focus on what your area of expertise is in that particular life zone.
Okay, now, one of the things that we want to talk about here is that we're talking right now in the area of expertise and how you can help. We're talking about the benefit. So we really look at this particular part of the pitch as the part where it's kind of the hook, isn't it? It's the part where if the person is actually hungry for this thing, this is going to be the part that really perks their ears up. Your name may or may not. But
of course, right. Right. So if I'm in a business setting and I'm trying to sell my services, I might say, you know, if let's say for example, I do a lot of work with hospitals and a lot of hospitals have issues with conflict among the professionals in the hospital and that causes issues, obviously serious issues due to conflict. So I might say to a hospital administrator, my area of expertise is helping physicians, clinicians work through conflict. Right. So that area of expertise might be the thing that I say, because I know that when I speak to them, that that's an area that they are definitely concerned about.
Right. Right. So you really are looking at the person you're speaking with in the context of the environment you're in and choosing your phraseology to match the situation and the person you're with.
Absolutely. I do not have a standard pitch. I change every time. And, in fact, sometimes when I meet someone and I don't know anything about them, it's a complete stranger, I won't even tell them what I do. I might try to find out what they do first or even ask them, well, I'll tell you, but why don't you tell me about what you do first? Because then it gives me more information, again, to modify and change what it is that I'm going to say to them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely the best way to do it if you can, is to jump, you be the one that starts. And by the way, people love to talk about themselves. So even if they don't have an elevator pitch or if they don't have any idea that that's what your goal is, to learn more about them so that you can actually answer the other question honestly but directly to meet any kind of needs that they might have. And it is not self-serving. A lot of these things that the mind says, oh, that's just being self-centered, but really what could be more caring than actually wanting to get to know a little bit about someone, and if there's something that you've been gifted in your life as a skill or a strength or a talent, to be able to share that with that person then in that context, that's actually the giving thing, the selfless thing, even though sometimes we just feel like, oh, this is just too out there.
Right. Okay. I mean, in my case, I mean, it's very, I mean, I can very clearly say that, you know, by helping doctors reduce conflict, they reduce the number of deaths in their hospital. So I'm helping the hospital, I'm helping individuals, I'm helping everyone by providing the ability to help them work through conflict. You know, in an organizational setting, it improves productivity. In a hospital setting, improving productivity means less death.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a very real benefit. You know,
you bet.
And that's not, you know, that's a good thing, I think. I mean, that's the way I do it.
Especially if it's me that's going to die. I think it's a great thing. You know, I mean, maybe you're listening and it's like, well, I can't save anybody's life. Well, you can maybe reduce stress. I mean, isn't that valuable? I mean, we all like anybody that can help us to, you know, reduce stress or save money or save time.
Always comes down to saving money, saving time, or increasing productivity.
It does.
I mean, pretty much everyone can offer something along those lines. What is it that you specifically do? And give the detail of it, not just the highlight, you know, not the high level of, you know, I improve productivity. Well, yeah, that's great. You know, I improve productivity, but how do I improve productivity for this particular person?
Yeah. Yeah. And then just to remember the difference between features and benefits. Benefits are the actual positive results that a person gets out of, you know, whatever it is you do, whereas features are just like what color it is, how big it is, where you do it, like that. But the benefits are the things like you'll save time. You know, I help people save time or reduce stress or less deaths or, you know, whatever it is. Those are the benefits, and that's what we want to be focusing on at that point.
And the benefits, usually in a conversation when you're doing a pitch, the benefits should come before the quote features, which is the actual what you do.
Yeah, right. Otherwise, you got them yawning already before.
Exactly.
Now, what happens though is if you've done a good job here, if we've done a good job of putting forth the benefits of what we do, then all of a sudden, you know, we've got 3% of the people that are right there. They were looking for just that service. Their eyes get big and they're like, wow, I was just looking for somebody to help me do that right now. You've got 30% of the people who are kind of mildly interested. They know that maybe somewhere down the road pretty soon they're going to be looking for that, you know, but they weren't really looking today, but they're interested enough to, you know, ask you clarifying questions and keep going. You've got 30% of the people who really don't think they would ever need what you're offering. You've got 30% of the people who are absolutely not interested. And you've got the last small percentage of the people who just could never. I mean, they just aren't in any kind of a situation where what you're doing would have any effect on them. So once we clarify, you know, once you give them a little bit here, you'll be able to tell if they're at all interested. Now, for instance, in the setting where I'm going, where the speed networking is, we're all kind of in the same business type of a business situation. So we are very interested before we even open our mouths. We know we're interested in what each other is doing. What are you doing? And so we know that we want the whole pitch ready to go. But in a conversation with someone that's new to you, you want to really be watching and listening for the kind of feedback that you're getting as you're going forward with this, instead of dumping the whole, you know, the whole load.
Right. What kind of signals are you getting? Are they showing interest? And I think I work a lot with people who are very, very technical, and these very technical people often tell me when they go to parties they don't get much past the first word of what they do, because people glaze over and go, And often I tell them, you know, talk about the benefit of what you do. You know, let's say they're a researcher at, you know, at University of Pennsylvania, which is one of my clients, and they want to talk about what they do. If they're at a party and they say, I do research, right, well, what's the benefit of your research? You know, do you help, you know, cure cancer patients? Do you help with Alzheimer's disease? You know, do you do something that is, you know, for epilepsy? What is it that's commonly known that you could talk about that would be a benefit and that would get the interest of the person?
Right. I was thinking about the difference between an HR person talking to a president of a company for the first time, and he asks, what do you do? And she says her name, and then she says, I work in HR. Or she says her name, and she says, I help you find the best people for the right positions in your company so that you can be the most profitable. You know, which person is he going to keep talking to?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, exactly. You gotta think a little bit out. outside of our head. How is this coming across to the person that we're saying it to? And what's in it for them, really? What's right. in it for them? Yeah. Okay, so the what you do then is the actual, this. If we say how you help is the benefit, what do we call the what you do?
And I think the what you do, if you want to do the benefit, feature benefit, I mean, I would say that's the feature. That's the concrete thing. That's the thing you can latch onto and say, oh, you know, I can help people improve their communication, but how do I help them do that? You know, how exactly, I mean, this comes down to how exactly does the person earn income, right? What are the things that they do? Because they may want to participate, let's say, in an online course. Well, do I offer online courses? They may want to hire me as a keynote speaker. They need to know, do I do keynote speeches? Right? So you have to tell them exactly what it is that you do so that they know that, yes, they can hire you for that particular aspect.
Well, I just have to tell y'all that I'm going to change my pitch around a little bit based on this, because I had my features first and my benefits second. And I think that that's a trap we fall into all the time.
Actually, Maury, I'm glad you said that, because I was going to mention that to you privately.
Oh, no, you can just correct me right here. Okay, so I'm going to read you guys my first pitch. Actually, I'm going to read you my revamped pitch here, and then I'll read you the first way I had it. So here's the revamped pitch then. Hi, I'm Marnie Swedberg. I help goal getters get unstuck fast in order to get back on track. I mentor thousands of leaders from over 30 countries via my online mentorship program, live presentations, and Google number one ranked connection sites, and I'm a media expert and speaker, author, trainer, and group coach in the 12 life zones. Okay, so what I did there is I put the I help goal getters get unstuck fast in order to get back on track. I put that first instead of that I mentor leaders and provide these other services. So once I've got the attention of somebody who is a goal getter, but they're stuck, then they want to know, how do you do that? And so the how is really the benefit, what they're going to get out of it, and then the next step, what you do actually to make that happen. Cool.
Exactly.
Okay. Why are you different or best? Lisa, why are you different or best? What would you say there?
So I always tell people that the thing that makes me different is that I'm very practical. I give very actionable advice. When someone attends a seminar or reads a program of mine, they can put the action into action and achieve a result. And what a lot of people love about my work is that it's really easy to read. It's really fun to read. In fact, people often comment on my humor, which to me is amazing. But they'll say, oh, well, it was really fun. And best of all, I get emails all the time from people that say, you know, I had this particular situation. I followed your advice, and I got X. You know, I got a job. I was able to get a promotion. I was able to get through this really difficult conversation. I met my neighbor down the street who I never would have met and made a lasting relationship with her. I get all kinds of emails from people as a result of going through the programs that I offer. And that, to me, having the ability to help people really is what makes me go. That's what makes me tick.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, for me, I always think that what makes me different is the broad spectrum of connections and experiences, and that gives me such a different perspective. It's more like a helicopter perspective versus down in the field, because I've worked with so many people in such different circumstances. So let's say, for example, if I'm talking to a women's ministry leader, I've worked with women's ministry leaders from big metro churches down to small country churches, and then gals from other countries, in fact, all the way down to the gals that have a tent ministry to take meals to people who don't have homes but are living in the forest with a cardboard box over a branch. So when you put all of that together, you have a really different perspective of women's ministry than someone who's just coming out of a women's ministry with, say, 35 people or 350 people. So I have a different perspective. But Lisa, when you hear me say that...
Right, that didn't come across in the thing that you had sent me.
No, right, and I really don't know how to communicate it.
So I think that your very first sentence that you said to me, that it was that you have a very broad experience, and I would say, you know, I have experience with blank, and then give your two extremes, you know, from the person in the, like you said, the countryside to the person who's in the city.
Big metro church.
Right. And that you've worked with so many people that perspective allows you to bring results or bring something. I'm not sure what the right words are exactly, but I think that you can pretty quickly say broad, the word broad, and then give the two examples, and that will help people get it that, oh, she can bring that to the table, that she has this broad vision that will help me. And I think that somebody who is looking for help to get out of obstacles, I mean, that's what you said, you're getting people through obstacles. Most professionals will recognize that the thing that often helps us get through an obstacle is not from your area. It's not from your direct experience. It's taking the experience from some other, in your case, you were just taking it from other ministries, but you also have those other 12 areas that you have. And often you can take a concept or an idea from one area, from completely different, unrelated area, plop it into a new area, and it makes such a significant change. It's a whole new mindset. And so what you bring is that freshness, that perspective of being able to bring in ideas from other places.
Yeah. And that's where most the inventions come from. Most inventions are not out of the lab. When something gets brought in, that's different.
Even think about, you know, internet businesses. I mean, think about how businesses change based on, you know, how we see things. You know, we saw the demise of the music industry because of the internet offering, you know, the per drink offerings of the music. And then we saw that same thing happen to the movie industry, right? People are starting to do the same thing there. And then now we're starting to see it even, you know, with the printer ink, right? There's some people that are starting to offer, you know, group. You go to a Staples and you say, I want a monthly fee and send me as much printer ink per month as possible. It's a concept. What does printer ink have to do with the radio, the record industry? But it's the same idea. It's the same concept, just repeated over and over and over again.
Yeah, we learn from each other. Yeah. Now, let's go ahead and move along here to the call to action. And this is, whether you are in sales, whether you are sharing your faith with somebody, whether you're asking somebody for a favor, whatever it is, when we get to this part, a lot of times we just don't do it. Oh, we chicken out. So, but really, the call to action is the guts of it.
Right. I mean, you have to ask them to do something, and if you're concerned, you know, some people I think are concerned because they think it's like, you know, I hate to say it this way, but, you know, asking the person to go to bed on the first date. You're not trying to do that. You're not even close to that. What you're trying to do in some cases is merely smile at the person, you know, take that look at them. And so what you need to think about is, you know, what's an appropriate thing to request of that person that doesn't seem overwhelming and that doesn't seem like you're trying to hardcore, quote, sell the person. And again, you may offer them something, you know, serve them, give them something that they want to have. You know, if you'd like a copy of my free book, go here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And that's one thing. If you have a website and you have something that you can put together as an offer, it's almost a staple now. You almost have to have something like that you can just offer for free. You know, we have, besides the website stuff, we have a restaurant and we have a retail store. And we have things that we can do with people that are free, that we can offer them for free if we are trying to make a good impression or trying to develop a relationship with somebody. We've got these all figured out, what we're going to offer them for free. And you need to do that too. It's just a basic business concept that you have something that you can offer.
Right. And again, when somebody, for example, connects with me on LinkedIn, right, there is somebody who says, Lisa, I'd like to connect with you. Now, what can I know about that person? If that's all they say in their invitation request, right, I could simply hit accept and go on, right, or I can take a moment to look at their profile, see if we have anything in common, then write one question answer back to them. Tell me more about X. Right, and now you've engaged that person. That's your call to action. Tell me more.
Mm. Oh, right? That's great. Yeah.
So you can engage people and take a next step simply by asking one question. You don't have to go through, you know, all the pieces that we talked about. That could be it. That could be your whole pitch.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. And it kind of, again, you know, test the water. How hungry is the person? You know, if you start with tell me more about X, and you guys get going and you realize this is a perfect fit, then, you know, you can go forward from there. Yeah, this is such good stuff, because I think that people hear the word elevator pitch and just kind of toss it out and say, well, I would never use one anyway, so I'm not going to put one together. But the reality is, if you have one when you need one, you're never going to regret putting one together. And if you don't use it the other times when you didn't need it, that's perfectly fine.
I think just the point that you made early on, that the other author, I've forgotten his name, who said that one of the values of going through the pitch is to clarify in your own mind what it is that you offer.
Right.
And if you can do it by category, so if I'm talking to this prospect or this category of person, what's the value going to be to them? If I'm talking to this category of person, what's my value going to be to them? And understanding your value proposition, what it is that you can offer to people that's valuable, is going to be helpful for you in many aspects of your business, not just this beginning introduction.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, this is Marnie. We're visiting today with Lisa B. Marshall. You can learn more about her at quickanddirtytips.com. We're going to come right back and talk about how to practice your pitch and how to modify your pitch when you need to. We'll be right back. Successfully maximizing the gifts God has given us is the best gift that we can give back to God. Are you 100% clear about why you're here, about how God defines success for you personally? Are you on track with God's plan for your life, the best life on planet Earth followed by the best possible eternity for you? If not, check out the Success Principles Intensive Training course over at Marnie.com. It's a 6-hour online program that will change how you define and do your life from today forward. It's a biblically based approach to goal setting and achievement. So check it out under the training tab at Marnie.com. Well, hi, this is Marnie. Welcome back. We are talking today with Lisa B. Marshall of quickanddirtytips.com. She is teaching us and training us and helping us understand how to make a good pitch. And we've been having a good time. If you're just joining us now, you can go back and catch the beginning of this program. And I encourage you to do that. It'll be in the archives shortly after we finish here online today. Okay, we've been talking about the components of good pitch, which is your name, area of expertise, how you can help, what you do, why you're different or best, and a call to action. And we're going to move along now to practicing your pitch. One of the things that happens with a project like this, Lisa, is that we'll put it together and then it goes in a drawer, and we never really get it down. What did it take for you to personally learn your pitch so that you really had it ready?
Well, there's nothing short of practice, right? Saying it over and over and over again, and I often tell people, the people that generally struggle the most with their pitches are ones that don't do it on a regular basis. You know, they, for whatever reason, the type of job they have or the situation that they're in, they just don't do it on a regular basis. And generally speaking, sales professionals obviously are doing it on a very regular basis, so they get better at it. And that's why we get this impression of, you know, quote, the slick salesman. And then there's people who don't have to talk about themselves quite as frequently, and then they get out of practice. And so I think that the best way to do it is to just, again, always put yourself in situations where you can practice. So I often tell people that you should regularly introduce yourself to a stranger. So once a week, make sure that you formally introduce yourself to a stranger. And so, you know, I introduce myself to people at the supermarket. I introduce myself to people at the gym. I introduce myself basically anywhere I go. My kids hate me for doing it. They're like, Mom, I thought we're not supposed to talk to strangers.
Ha.
So I like to make a game of it. You know, I introduce myself differently to different people, especially if it's a stranger, which, you know, I don't think it's going to have any impact. Try something out. See how it feels.
That's really fun. Now, so, okay, we're at the supermarket and you're walking down the aisle or you're in line and you decide this is the person I'm going to introduce myself to. How do you proceed?
Well, I often will try what I call the unintroduction. And so the unintroduction starts with a question. It's something that's pertinent to them. So let's say it's a woman and she's clearly very dressed in fine clothing at the supermarket. You know, she's got really nice clothes on. She's got high heels on, let's say. She's got a nice suit, an expensive suit. She's got an expensive purse with her, right? I'll say something about her clothes. Obviously, she takes pride in what she's wearing. So I might say something about, hey, that's a really beautiful suit. You know, or, wow, that purse, where did you get that purse? That's really gorgeous. You know, I might say something like that. Or if it's somebody, let's say it's somebody who's, you know, let's say it's a young kid, you know, who's got, like, the music, the iPod around his ears, and he's got, the pants slouching down around his butt. I might say, hey, what are you listening to? Right? So anything that I can grasp that looks like it's of interest to them, I'll try to create a question that gets their interest. And then I can gauge. Sometimes they look at me like, oh, go away, lady.
Right.
You know, that's fine. And then other times people will clearly, you know, engage and be happy to share whatever, you know, the answer to whatever question I've asked them. And that, for me, is the way to start the ball rolling. And sometimes, you know, the conversation continues, and eventually it comes to the point where I might ask them what they do. And usually after I've asked them what they do, they'll ask me, oh, well, what do you do? And then I give them my, quote, pitch. So I don't jump right in with my quote, pitch. I do the unintroduction first and then move to that.
Yeah, and test, like you say, test the waters and see if they're interested in hearing more. That's awesome. Yeah.
Sort of my favorite unintroduction question is, what do you do when you're not doing this?
That's fun. What do you do? I'm writing that one down. When you're not doing this, I love that question.
So you could be on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
You could be at a seminar. You could be in the supermarket. Anywhere. What do you do when you're not doing this? And that leaves it completely open for the person to share with you. Usually, the thing that's most important to them, because it's the first thing that jumps in their mind. Oh, I spend time with my kids. Oh, I'm at work all day long. Oh, I whatever. Right?
Yeah.
And then that gives
yep.
you an opportunity to start talking about whatever it is that's important to them.
Yeah. And that's such a good point, too. People will typically tell you what's most important first. And that's just something to know about what comes out of their mouth, is they are gonna kind of tip their hand a little bit and let you see into their life maybe a little more than they thought they were when they're listing their 10 things that they do. Okay, when you're practicing, I think, Lisa, for you and I probably, having done media like being radio interviewed or, you know, when you have a book or you're being interviewed for blogs or like that, you get used to answering questions about yourself. And one of the things that I do, and I'll let you share in just a moment, but one of the things that I do is actually stand in front of the mirror. And I actually, like, especially before TV, you figure out what you're going to answer. You actually go through what are the most likely questions that I'm going to be asked and what am I going to answer and what is my face going to look like when I'm answering? Because typically when you're really thinking hard, your face is not very camera friendly. And so what you want to do is you want to get your face and your body into a position where you can answer these questions very comfortably and actually look like you're comfortable, and it doesn't come naturally. You have to really work at it. I mean, sometimes it does, but it comes naturally maybe after a lot of practice, at least for me. What are your thoughts, Lisa?
So absolutely, I think it's important to always practice what it is that you're going to say. And for the average person, they may not be doing a media interview, but certainly they'll be in job interviews. right? So in a job interview, you're going to want to do the same thing. You're going to think about, well, what are the questions that are most likely going to be asked of me? And then, now I don't suggest the mirror only because the mirror is a fleeting glance. You may see something, you may not. I suggest now that everybody has webcams, just go ahead and record yourself with a video.
Right.
And you can use any one of the, you know, those websites that allow you to record yourself. You don't even have to have a camera. In fact, you can just click the go button on some of the sites and record yourself. And then play back your recording and look at your face and see if you're looking like you're enthusiastic and interested. And by the way, what does that mean specifically? You know, what behaviors give that? Well, you're smiling, and you're smiling what's called a natural smile, which means you've got the little crow's feet around your eyes. You've got a nice big bright look on your face. You're leaning in towards whoever's talking to, whoever you're talking with. And you have good posture, and you're looking as if you're very, very, very energetic, right? That's all part of this presentation of yourself. And we didn't talk about that before, but that's a very important part of the introduction. We talked about the words, but we didn't talk about that those nonverbal behaviors that dramatically impact the perception of the person you're meeting. And those often are subconsciously or pre-attentively viewed by the person. And so if it's something that you do, they're going to automatically, within, in some cases they say, some of the research says within a tenth of a second, they're going to make a decision about you, whether they like you or whether they want to continue on with a conversation with you. And so these behaviors that we just talked about are a critical part of the introduction itself. And that's part of the practice.
I love that. And, you know, I was thinking about before I would use the camcorder, and I think that was awesome, and I should go back to doing that again. What you see in the camcorder is so different, like you say, than from what you see in the mirror, because in the camcorder it catches all of your idiosyncrasies.
Then you get to play them back and go, oh, did I really do that? Oh!
I know, but it allows you to change your behavior before you do that actually on a TV interview or something like that. You mentioned that there are sites that you can go to and just record yourself.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
So on Vidler.com, I don't know if they still have a personal account, but on Vidler, for example, you used to be able to go there. I hope it's still available. Then you go to the site, and when you want to record yourself, you could just click like the red record button, and it records you right then and there through your camera, through your
really
computer camera.
And that's Vidler.
Vidler. Yes.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, and I don't know. I haven't. Because I have pretty sophisticated equipment, I haven't done the poor man's route, but I know that there's a ton of sites that offer that type of service where you can just click. I think Vimeo might be one where it'll click record.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right. Very good. Well, let's go ahead down to the last point then here of modifying your pitch. We've been kind of talking about this as we've been going along today, modifying your pitch to work with who you're talking to instead of just memorizing it and rotely just saying it to every person you ever meet from this day forward, which we never recommend. You want to be able to modify it for the person you're with. Lisa, do you have any other thoughts on that topic?
Well, yes. One of the things that I suggest people do is to find a meetup group and pick a meetup group that would, and this, of course, is more challenging, but pick a meetup group of people that you would find yourself with nothing in common with.
Mm.
Not a meetup group that you want to go to, a meetup group that would be completely foreign to you. And go to their meeting and introduce yourself, because you're going to discover things about your modification process, because you're going to have to modify. You're being forced to modify on the fly, because these are people you don't typically interact with. And so you'll learn how to talk about what you do differently by interacting with people who are quite different than who you normally interact with.
Have you ever personally really done that?
Yes, I have. I actually did a worse version of it. At one time, I was in a seminar. It was one of these personal development type seminars, and they asked you to go do something very uncomfortable, the thing that would make you the most uncomfortable. And so I forced myself to walk into a bar, sit down at a bar, and introduce myself to three people sitting at the bar. And for me, I mean, at the time, I was in my 20s at the time, this was devastating, you know, to have to walk into a strange place like a bar, you know, that was completely something that, you know, was not of my, you know, in my world, and to walk in and to have to explain, you know, who I was and why I was introducing myself to, you know, 60-year-old men who are sitting around in this old pub from God knows when. And I can tell you that taught me, you know, that certainly there's not going to be any introduction situation, you know, going forward that could have been any worse than that for me, you know, any more stressful. And it taught me to think about, you know, again, how to introduce myself, you know, in a way that makes sense for, you know, that person.
When I was preparing for the show today, I found Craig Harrison's site, Expressions of Excellence, and he has a whole bunch of sample elevator speeches on it. And there were a couple here that I thought I wanted to just throw out the first line, just the intro line, because they're so good. And it kind of takes it to another level. And it's like, okay, as you keep modifying your pitch, you'll be able to get more comfortable in your skin. You'll be able to get more comfortable with your pitch. And I think that you'll be able to adopt some things that really express your personality when you're launching into your pitch. So there was a lawyer for nonprofits, and the way that she starts her pitch is this line: I'm saving the people who are saving the world. Okay, so she's Alice Anderson, and she's a lawyer for nonprofits, and that's how she starts, which I loved that. I'm saving the people who are saving the world. Wow, that's memorable. And then there was an insurance agent who starts with, I'm a money man with a plan. I make sure the money keeps flowing when your income stops. Well, that gets the attention, doesn't it? So a lot of times you can just have one of these little sound bites right at the top, start that that really is memorable. And even if they don't remember your name, they're going to remember, yeah, he's the guy with the plan, you know, or she's the person that works with those nonprofit people saving the world.
Right. I have the line that says, I'm passionate about communication. Your success is my business.
You know what? Your line was cutting out right there. Say that again.
I often say, I'm Lisa B. Marshall, passionate about communication. Your success is my business.
Your success is my business. Oh, that's awesome.
Right.
Well, this has been a great hour. Lisa, if somebody comes over to quickanddirtytips.com, what are they going to find there?
Well, Quick and Dirty Tips is a broad website. It's the Quick and Dirty Tips team, so there's a variety of experts there. There's not just me. I'm a host on the Quick and Dirty Tips website. My character is called the Public Speaker, so they can go to the Public Speaker link and find over 162 shows. Sorry?
There you go. Okay, now it's better. It was just so cutting out. Okay, you are one of the writers there. And then keep going.
One of the podcast hosts.
Oh, podcast hosts.
Yes, podcast hosts, and there's over 162 shows from my area of expertise, which is the Public Speaker. That's the name of the show. But there's a variety of experts there. You can find the Grammar Girl or the Sales Guy or the Modern Manners Guy or Nutrition Diva. There's a whole host of different characters, different hosts in different areas that you can find expert advice in the quick format. You can also go to my own website, which is lisabmarshall.com, and you can find out more about the services that I offer there, as well as, of course, you said about my book, Smart Talk, which is now available as of today, in fact, available for pre-order in all of the places that you would find books, so Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Powell's, and you know, everybody's got it now, so I'm very excited.
That's awesome. Well, and congratulations to you. The book, again, is titled Smart Talk, and Lisa's name is Lisa B. Marshall. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a fantastic hour full of information that we're going to be able to put into practice, and I thank you for coming and sharing it with us.
Well, I thank you, and I thank the listeners for listening, and hopefully they'll be able to put into action some of these tips. That's what I'm known for, right? Put it into action.
Put it into action. I'm here to make you a success. Okay, well, thanks everybody for joining us, and we will see you again next time on Marnie's Friends. You have a great day and a great week. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.